sea otter reintroduction as a way of kind of building resilience against climate change effects and kind of general losses of habitat and resources populations.
Success may also require thinking on a longer timeline.
Sea otters have only been gone from Oregon for a blink of an eye. They've been gone since a few years before my grandfather was born. And my hope is that by the time I have grandchildren, they'll be able to go to Port Orford or Cape Arago and see sea otters playing off the coast just as their ancestors always had. I think it's important that we don't get overburdened by the daily and yearly challenges that we face in conserving our natural resources and begin to think multi-generationally about the things that we want our grandchildren to experience.
You've been hearing highlights from The Lost Sea Otters of Oregon, a program produced by Oregon Wild. You can hear the entire fascinating series at oregonwild.org/wildlife/Lost Sea Otters of Oregon, or you can just Google it if that's easier for you, Lost Sea Otters of Oregon. You've been listening to Voices for the Animals here on 90.7 KBOO FM, where we defend the defenseless and give a voice to those who have no choice and no voice in our world.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Dost movie screening on Saturday, February 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Dost is a documentary about a young lady who uses psychedelic therapy to overcome her addiction to heroin. After the show, there will be a panel discussion featuring members of the cast and production. They will be taking questions from the audience. Again, that's the Dost movie screening on Saturday, February 1st at 3:30 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's just after 10:31. And I get to remind you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO members, listeners, and support from Dark Side Cinema, open every night and featuring independent foreign and art house films. The Dark Side is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com. And with that, it's time for Film at 11.
Whole house full of people are, as usual, Mona.
Yes, indeed, I am here.
And Mark Mohan of the late of the Oregonian and now of the Oregon Arts thing website.
I believe it's called Oregon Arts Watch.
Watch, okay.
Last I checked.
You
I can write that. I can write
in
that
any
down
event,
for
we're
you
happier
in the future. It's nice to see you, Mona.
It's
been
nice
a while.
To see
we
you
used
too,
to
Mark.
We used to all do this show in
true,
another
yeah
format in another time and place, and it was fun. So I'm
yes,
glad we're getting the band back together here.
Well,
however briefly.
Fair enough.
Generally, we start off with doing a survey of some of the shows around town, but all that's available on the show notes for this episode on the website on kboo.fm. So you can go there and look, but we will touch on a few of them. But for example, one of the movies that is opening today is The Gentleman.
The Gentleman, yes. It's the new Guy Ritchie movie starring Matthew McConaughey and a bunch of other people.
So it's not just Matthew McConaughey doing a one-man show?
Colin,
that would be the gentleman.
Colin Farrell is in it.
Colin Farrell. Actually, it's a really great cast. I'm sorry. I've been caught unawares. I didn't realize I was the person who had to talk first.
Ah.
It has lots of manly men in it, doesn't it?
It does
this
have
movie?
Lots of
I've
manly
only seen
men
the advertisements. But
here, why don't you just vamp for a second, Mark?
Well, it's a story about Hugh Grant approaches Charlie Hunnam as the movie opens, and it's kind of confusing, but he's pitching him a movie story, which is actually the story of this criminal enterprise that Hunnam is involved in. And so what we're seeing is a huge flashback, and then we're up into the present about 20 minutes before the movie's over. You know, this one, 3 weeks earlier, you know, after a cold opening. And so,
well, typical Guy Ritchie. Yeah, jumping around in time.
Stop freezing the film and drawing something on this image and pointing at a person and labeling them as one thing or another. It's a clever mystery. The premise is, I won't reveal it, but the premise has something to do with how McConaughey has risen to the top of the pot empire of England. And but he has, there's some jealousy and people want to take over his thing, and so there's a conspiracy against him. Well, and we follow the permutations of that as Hugh Grant essentially walks us through the story.
Well, there's a lot going on, though, because it's not just one person who's trying to take this over.
Correct.
It's this whole, it's very convoluted. So if you're familiar with Guy Ritchie movie, it is a Guy Ritchie movie. Boy, is it a Guy Ritchie movie. There's a lot of moving parts.
Is his birth name Guy, or did he just name himself that to just kind of be more laddish?
You know, underscore the masculine.
Yeah. Interesting. Maybe it's Wesley or something like that.
I don't know.
Could be Guy, though. I mean,
it's too bad we don't have the internet.
It's a French name, Guy.
Marion Morrison, perhaps. That's his
anyway, yes. Nice. Also starring Michelle Dockery of... Most famous from Downton Abbey.
Oh, okay. See, I've never seen a second of that.
Okay. Colin Farrell, as you said, Henry Golding. And a bunch of other familiar faces, too. Eddie Marson is in here. Yeah, good cast.
I will point out that Hugh Grant is really quite good in this movie.
Yes, I love him in this movie. He doesn't have any of the Hugh Grant tics that he normally has when he's doing a
the
romantic comedy.
The stuttering and
the sort of like bashfulness and stuff. He's very brash and very funny in this movie. Very dry. Mm-hmm. Very dry. His delivery is great. He's really
good. Found it to be a fun movie. I don't have anything against Guy Ritchie, per se. I haven't liked every single one of his movies, but this one's fine.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think, again, it's formulaic in the Guy Ritchie way, but I like what he does, and there's some good stunts. I always do enjoy the kind of movie where you do go back in time, and you start to see things from a different point of view, and then you're like, oh, that's what was really going on in this situation. I think it's going to do quite well, actually. It had a good opening night last night.
I'm delighted to hear that.
So,
moving around town, the revival houses, we've got Red Rock West playing at the Hollywood. And it's the last weekend of it's playing there?
No, it played there this past weekend.
Oh.
There was a screening, and the director, John Dahl, was in town for that.
Did you go?
I did go.
Oh, how was
and
it?
It was quite enjoyable.
I like the fact that the Hollywood and the Cinema 21 are getting people to come.
Yes,
to the
it's definitely nice, and it got me out of the house. Red Rock West, for those who may not recall, came out originally in about 1992.
It was one of the first films Soleil.
Yes, yes, I know, and I know that's one of your favorite genre terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Spot on.
It is. It's Nicolas Cage, Dennis Hopper, the late great J.T. Walsh is in it as kind of the main heavy. And
no one did anger as good as J.T.
Sort of
Walsh.
Sort of, yeah, slow boiling stuff. It was being presented, I guess, nominally as part of this Nicolas Cage series that the Hollywood was putting on. But John Dahl came to town. I believe he did a radio interview on this very station.
Oh, good.
In fact, and then appeared for a Q&A after the movie. The reason that movie is kind of close to my heart, in addition to being an entertaining kind of thriller, darkly comic thriller, is that I saw it, like I said, you know, 92, I had just moved to Portland. I was just sort of realizing that you could go to places like Cinema 21, which I think is where I saw that. This movie played there for about a week, and this is just as I was starting work in the video store industry, and it was one of the very first films that came out essentially straight to video.
Right.
And yet was still a good quality movie and became kind of a cult sensation through its home video release. And so I have fond memories of seeing the movie, and I have fond memories of it making a fair amount of money for my employer at the time. So it was nice to revisit it and see that it still is this fresh, entertaining film. And oddly enough, very difficult to watch other than as a theatrical revival like this. Not available on Blu-ray, never been released. DVD is out of print, not currently available on any streaming service. So this is maybe a lesson in that when something like this comes along, buy a ticket and go to the show if you want to see the film, because there's no guarantee that it's going to be available through another avenue.
Mm. Yeah, I was having a problem with Party Girl. Very hard movie to find.
The Parker Posey?
Yes.
One? Yeah.
I finally ran down a copy, but, you know, it's just basically it's only on VHS. It hasn't...
Yeah. I would assume that the DVD is available for rental at Movie Madness, probably. Right. But, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll get broken. Who knows?
Yeah.
I hope not.
Let's hope not.
So the takeaway here is that pay attention to these schedules, because you don't know who's going to come. Was it a surprise? They just show up, or
no? It was advertised in advance, and he got a warm welcome, and was a very engaging storyteller.
Now at the Film Study Center, there's two great big things going on at once. One is Real Music, and the other is the Agnes Varda retrospective. I haven't seen any of the new documentaries, but I'm really interested in some of them. Mm-hmm. Mr. J, Who Will Let the Dogs Out. There's several documentaries there that seem to focus on obsession within mm-hmm. music fandom. And
the Who Let the Dogs Out is one of the few that I have seen. I think it screens tomorrow, Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I would check to be sure. It is. You know, can you do the chorus of the song?
Mona, yes, come on. I can.
Come on.
I could.
You could.
No, I'm not doing it.
Oh, all right. Yeah, okay. Well, it transcribes as "Who let the dogs out? Woof, 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 woof," or right. something like that. You all know it. It was it was a brief, momentary boil on the musical culture.
Baseball games.
Play it in stadiums.
I can't get away from this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe this would be sort of an exorcism of that. There's this guy who went down basically a Wikipedia research rabbit hole to try and find out where this song had come from, and it becomes a pretty engaging kind of mystery slash almost a legal thriller. As someone who's currently studying intellectual property law, there's some really interesting stuff in here mm-hmm. about trying to track down who originated that phrase slash chant slash chorus. And it keeps, it's like an onion, the layers of the onion just keep getting unpeeled, and I don't want to give away,
right.
you know, the source of the Nile here, but...
But there are several claimants.
There are several claimants, ranging from London to the Bahamas to the Midwest of the U.S. to, like, all sorts of places.
How did it all come... Well, I'll just have to wait
You got to watch the movie. It's nice and brief. It's only maybe an hour or a little bit longer, and I went into it definitely skeptical. Like, I'm not a Baja Men fan, but it was very entertaining.
Yeah. Rick Mitchell and I and Ben Pott from the Film Study Center discussed the whole festival last week and went through some of the movies, but we hadn't had a chance to see any of them yet, so I'm glad that you were able to... Mm-hmm. Are there any others in the Real Music?
Well, the other one I can think of off the top of my head, I don't have it in front of me, but they're showing Amazing Grace, which was rediscovered Aretha Franklin church concert film that was made by Sidney Pollack back in the 70s and then shelved for what reason, I don't know. Now it's been rediscovered. I did see it at some point. And yeah, I mean, it's captivating.
What I want to say about that is if you can't make it to the Real Music Festival for The Amazing Grace, which is screening on Sunday, mm-hmm. This coming Sunday, it's actually streaming, I believe, right now on Hulu, perhaps? Hulu or Netflix? I think it's Hulu. So if you have Hulu, you should be able to find Amazing Grace. But I would recommend trying to get to some of these. They're doing some classics, right? You talked about this last week, but Gimme Shelter, Harder They Come. I mean, these are movies that you haven't been able to see on a big screen since they came out, right? The Last Waltz. Crazy.
Yeah, The Last Waltz is being shown in tandem with a documentary mm-hmm. about Robbie Robertson and some of the conflicts and within the band.
That one's kind of the big draw, sounds like, because that's a movie that's going to be theatrically released in the next weeks or months, and this is a
it's
sort of a sneak
tonight,
preview screening.
Yeah. And so it's a chance to see it a little bit earlier. But so what's so big about Agnes Varda?
Well, physically, not much. She's a smallish person. This is coming up. I don't think this weekend, but next weekend, the Film Center is starting. It's been a touring retrospective throughout the country. Agnès Varda, the pioneering new wave French filmmaker who passed away last year. I think it was last year. It wasn't as far back as 2018, was it? Yeah.
No.
And so, yeah, it's a career-spanning retrospective running from her first feature, which I think is from like 1956, La Pointe Courte, up through her later films, which most people are more familiar with, the documentaries such as The Gleaners and I.
Yeah.
And
Agnès by Varda.
Right.
And the most recent one where she's with that painter.
Yeah, actually Faces Places was the English title of the film, at least.
It's a very sad moment when she goes to hook up with Godard in Switzerland and he won't answer the door. I mean, maybe he wasn't there, but the point is that she has a firm connection with the French New Wave. In fact, some people view her and the documentarian... I'll come up with his name in a second. as the real founders of the New Wave, along with the neorealist directors from the post-war era, and she didn't really gain international prominence until Cleo from five to seven
was sort of mid-60s. Yeah, and I think it's almost. You know, too obvious to say, but I mean, clearly she missed out on having the reputation and the exposure that Godard and Truffaut had because she was a woman, and so she was not taken as seriously at the time, even though the work she did was just as sort of groundbreaking and formally experimental.
And they all praised her as the founding mother of the...
Yes, right. But, and I guess, you know, I almost object to that term because it sort of puts her in this corner as like this nurturing thing that allowed them to do what they did instead of just kind of flowering on her own and being appreciated, you know, on her own terms and for her own work instead of as kind of this greenhouse for everyone.
Well,
else.
I'd like to think it's happening now. And yes, this retrospective may be representative of that. But are they showing all of her works?
I don't know that I would say all comprehensively, but it's an expansive list. I know the first weekend of the series they're showing they're showing La Pointe Courte, which is a charming little drama set in a fishing village in the south of France, starring Philippe Noiret.
Yeah,
as a young but still he looks just like Philippe Noiret. He's still got the jowly kind of Walter Matthau of France look to him. And they're showing Cleo from 5 to 7, and then a series of short films. As well, beyond that, I would have to consult their schedule.
Okay.
But I know it's over. I think 2 or 3 weekends. So.
Yes. Well, this is Film at 11. I'm with Mona.
Hi.
And Mark Mohan.
That's right.
And I'm DK Holm, and we're talking about movies. You know, the DVDs are coming out every Tuesday since 1999.
There was a time when they changed it. You're right. It used to be Wednesdays until some point. Yeah, good memory.
It's funny. The comic books always come out on Monday or Friday.
I think they're Tuesdays now, too.
Tuesday,
yeah,
okay.
Everything's but, Tuesday.
Yeah. Now, what this means is that Mona had a chance to catch up with...
Oh, finally.
with a certain movie on DVD.
Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
Knives Out. Oh, I loved it. I mean, of course. I mean, I'm just jumping on a bandwagon that most people have already jumped on. This is... it was a big movie. Just very recent, but now it came out not long before Christmas, correct?
Yeah.
So here it is on DVD, and I strongly urge anyone who has not seen it to please watch it. It is the first time I've seen Daniel Craig look like he's having fun in a film.
Well, it's directed by and written by Rian Johnson.
Yes.
Who, for some, perhaps Mark can explain this to me. Why does everybody hate him for the Star Wars movie?
Well, not everybody hates him. Let's just say that there's a fan culture that feels that they have a certain ownership over certain properties.
Am I taking 7 people on Reddit too seriously?
No, you're probably taking 70,000 people
In principle, a little bit. Yeah, I think. I mean, Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a hugely complicated question. But yeah, Mona, like, that's absolutely right. That's what I would say, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. People, because how do you take a property like Star Wars, most famous for doing the latest round of Star Wars movies, and how do you take a property like Star Wars that most of us have grown up with and hold very dear? It was certainly a seminal movie for a lot of people. For a lot of people, it was the first movie they saw in theaters. Certainly the first movie I saw when I was young that gave me that sense of, like, magical wonder that I hadn't experienced since I was a small child watching a movie.
Well, Doctor Who doesn't have any trouble. World.
Well, no, Doctor Who has a lot of trouble.
Oh.
Yeah, no, Doctor Who has its haters, too, believe me. They don't let you, you're not supposed to change anything that they hold dear. So when you make a big change to a... make any changes, there are segments that don't like it, but it doesn't matter.
We'll move off this in a second.
It doesn't matter, but anyway, the thing
I just want to know
is,
what do they want? They want it to be the exact same thing.
They want everything to be
the
same and nothing to change.
Anyway, back to Knives Out.
There's no explaining it. It's emotional. It's not intellectual, okay? But anyway, Rian Johnson wrote and directed this movie, and it is... I want to say kind of an old-fashioned, but it's an old-fashioned modern whodunit. It takes place in an incredible mansion. And, I mean, really, the mansion is a character in the movie as well. And the cast is unbelievable. Daniel Craig, as I mentioned. Chris Evans, not very Captain America-y in this one at all. Ana de Armas, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Toni Collette. What is happening? Lakeith Stanfield, Christopher Plummer. This cast is ridiculous, and they're so good. Like,
so it's they're funny.
They are funny, and this movie is funny.
You think, as you're watching it, that you're... you know what's happening,
no.
That you're keeping up.
You don't know what's happening.
But it turns out, not unlike the Guy Ritchie movie.
Right.
There's stuff other going.
Just about to try and make a comparison there. Yeah. I feel like, and I have not seen the latest Guy Ritchie movie, and I have liked some of his films.
But you have.
But others, I mean, yeah, I know the drill. And this Knives Out, which I have seen, feels to me like the Guy Ritchie movie that Guy Ritchie wishes he was kind of smart enough to make. Right, like that's maybe too much of a diss because he's got his own thing going on, but like it's got the same sense of like fun and great ensemble cast and kind of, you know, plot maneuvering that's got these complex gears, but it's just kind of a level above what
there's a masculinist element to Guy Ritchie's movies, and it can be kind of grim in this one, The Gentleman. It's a lot more serious and dark in some ways than his earlier films, whereas there's a lightness and intellectual playfulness to this. There's all sorts of in-jokes about Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow and other elements like that. And so you're tickled, your mind is tickled as well as your funny bone.
It's a smart movie. It's not just a fun movie, it's a smart movie. And we don't always get that, you know? Smart movies aren't necessarily fun.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Well, speaking of all this murder, now I think it's time for us to maybe take a gander at some of those people who have passed
who are
on.
No longer with us?
Yeah, in the past few weeks. We've skipped it because we always like Mona to do this.
I'm ashamed to say that the only celebrity other than Jim Lehrer, RIP, as a good newsman, no. He was a good newsman.
A good news reader, maybe, but go ahead.
He was a real journalist. Yeah. R.I.P. Mr. Peanut, 104 years old.
I don't know. How do you kill a company mascot?
Well, we don't know. Is he really dead?
Was he ever really alive?
All right. Well, from the ridiculous to the sublime, Buck Henry has passed on.
That is Ted. Yeah.
You know, Get Smart, The Graduate.
Oh, no. Brilliant. Yeah. I didn't even know that
Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, that's right. And Terry Jones.
Yes, that's the one I was thinking
of.
That's
very sad. Like, I actually did know that.
Truly sad. I mean, he had been clearly quite ill for a few years. But you know, you look back on him as kind of at least one of the two hearts and souls of Monty Python. You know, I mean, he was kind of the one who kind of kept them on the straight and narrow a little bit in terms of, you know,
directed Life of Brian. Come on, that's one of the funniest
movies
ever
Holy Grail.
Made
yeah
well
that is very sad.
Ivan Passer, Yvonne Passer. I can't say his name right, but the Cutter's Way, but also a series of...
he was a Czech emigre,
series of,
correct?
Of, yeah, of art house, 60s art house films from the Czechoslovakia. Here's someone, Silvio Horta, who invented Ugly Betty.
Yeah, that's also really sad. He created a whole different kind of genre for TV and opened up the doors for Latinx actors in a way that hadn't happened before.
And there's another Monty Python person. We're talking about artists now. There's another, Neil Innes, who was
involved. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Yes, so it's a sad coincidence. But also, you guys should be especially interested in, not interested, Sid Mead, best known for his contributions to Blade Runner, Tron, and Star Trek The Motion Picture. You know, as a conceptual artist, this is very...
He sort of invented that notion that a person could be, I don't know, I forget what his title was, but he was like sort of visual consultant or something, where he would just design the looks of these films. And yeah, a fantastic imagination.
Yeah.
Although if he'd lived today, he wouldn't have had to be that imaginative to come up with Blade Runner, but...
Okay, so that's that. Now, you know, I just watched a movie. This will take us out of the show. I wish that you guys had seen this. It's called In Search of the Last Action Heroes. It's a brand new 3-hour documentary about action films. And, of course, it covers all of the regular big deal movies like Die Hard and Last Boy Scout, etc. But it also delves into the world of Philippine action films. It traces the whole history of, and it's a smart documentary. It explains the difference, you know, how you went, what are the key transitions was, you get your Arnold Schwarzenegger and Stallone in there, and then they pump themselves up and they're big and they're more than human. But they don't act that well for the most part. And so the big people in Hollywood said, hey, you know, we could get Bruce Willis and make him, teach him how to
take
fight.
A halfway decent actor and put him through. We saw that with Kumail Nanjiani with the Eternals. Like, he's all buffed up now.
Right.
You can take a regular sized actor and do stuff to him.
Yes, exactly. Right, and you'll get a better acting job out of this person. This is a fascinating documentary. It's got lots of talking heads in it, lots of excerpts, lots of explanations, a lot of attention to the music and the composers of movies such as The Terminator and also there's this weird rabbit hole about the song The Touch. That was...
Oh, from the Transformers movie?
From the Transformers movie, show.
Which is then performed in Boogie Nights
is also
by
performed
Mark Wahlberg.
But the composer, the guy that sang that, became one of the big action movie composers and songwriters. So it's just, it's a fascinating, it's a joy to watch.
I would like to watch this. How may I?
I would like to watch this too.
Yeah, well, you got to go on a streaming service.
Like, okay. Which one?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Apparently
I didn't do
it
my...
is rentable on Prime Video.
It is? Oh. Okay, good. So
that's all I got.
We're almost near the end here. Mark, is there... I think there was one other topic that you would express some...
Well, speaking of streaming services, I was going to briefly plug a streaming service that I've subscribed to and have been pleased with recently, which is called Mubi, M-U-B-I, and they do a pretty good job of unearthing some kind of hidden gems, stuff that's really off the beaten path, and most recently they have begun a series of films by the Japanese director Yuzo Kawashima, who I'd never heard of, and I'm a big fan of Japanese post-war cinema. Never heard of this guy's name. I've watched a couple of these movies they have of his. They're set in, you know, red light districts of Tokyo and feature sort of characters from the underclass, but they're very entertaining. I would check out that service in general. You can flip through what they've got on offer, and I think it's well worth a look.
That sounds great. It makes a fine companion to Criterion Channel, but also Canopy, the
other sort of art house oriented kind of subscription
service.
Yeah, that
we can get free through the public library online. Okay, well, thank you, Mark. That was Mark Mohan, a plugging away at the law
guest.
Books,
yep.
Yes.
But yet still getting time to watch a movie or two. And then Mona,
yeah,
of course, thank I'm you here. Once again. And I'm DK Home, and this is Film 11. And we also want to thank Sonia, our
yes,
engineer board operator, for
thank you,
yeah, for support. Okay, thank you, everybody, and we will be back next week to talk about the Cascade African Film Festival.
Sounds great.
Ooh, can I come?
You sure may.
Yes.
All right.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The New Year Dragon Dance Parade to celebrate the Year of the Rat begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and ends at the Oregon Historical Society. Live afternoon performances and activities will begin at 1:30 p.m. Again, that's Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The parade begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and the activities and performances begin at 1:30 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. Information about the parade route, performers, and sponsors can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 11:01 a.m. and it's time for, well, it's time to finish out the radio zine this week with Rising Up with Sonali from, I believe,